For over a century, I have lived in secret, hiding in the shadows, alone in the world. I am a vampire.
I've been a slave to vampires for 30 years.
What are you? What are you? You're impossibly fast and strong. Your skin is pale white and ice cold. You never eat or drink anything. You don't go out in the sunlight. I know what you are.
Say it.
Vampire.
Vampire. Vampires.
In every generation, there is a chosen one. She alone will stand against the vampires, the demons, and the forces of darkness. She is the Slayer.
Stop this predator, evil, blah, blah, blah. I've heard it, okay?
I'm not a monster.
Yes, you are a monster. Vampires are monsters. They make monster movies about them.
Well, yeah, you got me there.
Vampires. There's just no getting rid of them, is there? At least not in print. Did you know there are literally thousands of vampire novels out there today? Detective vampire novels, presidential thriller vampire novels, romances, alternate histories, nerdy, geeky teen stories, comics. They're in every possible genre. Veteran NPR correspondent Margot Adler has read a whopping 270 vampire novels, and now she's written her own book explaining why.
Well, I had read, a couple of the Twilight novels on a plane. And then 8 days later, my husband, who was in perfect health, was a runner, never smoked, was, the person who was going to live to be 100 at least, And he was diagnosed with terminal stomach cancer. He only lived 9 months. And I, as I was sitting by his bedside, just started having read these two Twilight novels and maybe one Anne Rice novel in the past. I just started obsessively reading them. And I think at the beginning, the journey was all about mortality.
So is this partly escape fantasy, I guess, kind of imagining what it would be like to live in a world where you and your husband, neither of you had to die?
I think it started out that way. And also what became fascinating later is I ended up reading this unbelievably interesting book called The Liquid Dreams of Vampires by Martin Ricardo. And this book analyzed the fantasies of hundreds of women and men about vampires. And what was really fascinating about it was they didn't want to have sex with them. They wanted to be them. And all of my fantasies at the time were being a vampire, not, meeting a vampire or whatever. So I think that was one of the first things I learned. But then somewhere around, around 2 months into this, while I was still sort of sitting, on the bedside with my husband, I suddenly went, all right, I've been meditating on mortality, and that's very interesting. But that doesn't explain the larger question, which is, why did Hollywood spend $7 billion on vampire films and television shows? What is giving traction in our culture to all of this vampire literature, films, television? What's going on? Right. And that was what really started my journey.
So you end up with this really interesting take on that question. Vampires are us. We are the vampires?
Well, I started out, first of all, everybody said to me, it's all teens and sex. That's all it is, And that didn't quite make sense because if you look at the classic vampire novels like Anne Rice and Chelsea Quinn Yarbrough and other people like that, there's no intercourse. There's biting, there's eroticism, but there is no intercourse.
Wait,
so
really?
I think of the Anne Rice books as filled with sex. There's no, there's sensuality, there's biting, but there's no going in and out, put it that way. There's no intercourse going on there. Absolutely none. And in fact, the vampires can't have that kind of sex in those novels. They can in a lot of other novels, but they can't in those. And so I went on from there. And then one day I came across this line in a book by Nina Auerbach called Are Vampires Ourselves? And she said, every age embraces the vampire it needs. And so one day I was just sitting around and I put all the most popular vampires in television that I could think of in the last 15 years. And I was, you know, I went the Cullens and Twilight and Stefan and Damon in the Vampire Diaries and Bill and Eric in True Blood and, oh, those, you know, Aidan and Mitchell in the Being Human. And anyway, I had a long list and I looked at them all and suddenly I went, oh, my heavens, they're all conflicted. They're all desperately struggling to be moral despite being predators, often failing. But they're often, you know, that's what they are. And I suddenly went, oh, and that's exactly who we are now. Mm. We're struggling in the same way, except, and this is a simplistic way of putting it, but, you know, our blood is oil. Our blood is fossil fuels. We're sucking the lifeblood out of the planet. And
what a creepy insight, though.
That's right. And then came this really wild, wild moment. First of all, I called up Whitley Strieber, who wrote The Hunger. And I said, Whitley, am I totally crazy? I've known him for years. And he went, our prey is the planet. You know, it was really funny. But then came this other weird moment when I was saying to myself, okay, so how far back does the conflicted vampire go? It goes back probably to Barnabas and Dark Shadows. And he wasn't even really called a vampire until around 68, even though the show started before that. And that was when we saw the Earth from space. We suddenly saw ourselves as vulnerable. We saw ourselves as complicit. We saw the planet as something that the astronauts could blot out with their thumb.
We saw this vulnerable blue marble suspended in space.
Exactly. Exactly. And so I actually sort of think that our vampires changed when our view about ourselves and the Earth changed.
Mm. In all the vampire novels that you read, did you see us working out any solutions to this tension between the Earth and ourselves as predators?
Well, I just recently came across Julie Kagawa, I think is her name, and she's written a couple of sort of dystopian vampire novels. And one of them involves a young woman who's a vampire hunter. And there's this line in it that I remember, in which is kind of, you know, if you become a monster, what kind of a monster will you become? Mm. And that's kind of the question, you know, will you be able to restrain yourself? Will we, as these predators on the Earth, be able to restrain ourselves and allow the planet to survive, or will we not?
And one way a lot of vampires in contemporary books try is you see them trying to abstain from drinking human blood. You know, that's
absolutely,
that's sort of like us trying to eat local and change our light bulbs. Recycle a whole lot. Do any vampire books have happy endings?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, you'd even have to think that Twilight does in a way, doesn't it?
Because what I'm wondering about the happy endings is if you see in the vampire novels an explication of the tension between predator and prey, the Earth being the prey. For our age, I'm wondering if there are any happy resolutions.
Well, I think that I actually had an email exchange with Anne Rice that totally blew my mind. You know, I wrote her a letter and, you know, I had never met her. And I said, you know, dear Anne Rice, I'm doing this book and I'm trying to find why vampires have traction in our culture. And she wrote me an email that started out in sort of, oh, well, I have nothing more to say than anybody else. The vampire represents the outsider, blah, blah, blah. And then suddenly there's this sentence. And the sentence is, but for teens, they are very attracted to vampires because they are desperately seeking a noble path through the hideous passage that Western culture has set up for them. Wow, right? And I started thinking about the Cullens having to go to high school over and over and over. In those books and in the movie, they
well,
have
that
to go
isn't
to
a living
school.
Hell. I don't know.
Yes, exactly. That's horror, right? Suppose you had to go to your senior prom 5 times, right? I mean, talk about horror. So I started thinking, you know, teens have to negotiate corporate culture, jock culture, high school, parents, teacher authority figures, the whole gamut of stuff. And of course, they're looking for another way. And I also think teens have a clearer-eyed perception of the abuse of power than anybody else because they're under the thumb of school and parents, and they see clearly, whereas all the rest of us, all of us parents, have sort of, well, we've sort of succumbed a little bit.
And they're also doing all of this while their bodies are transforming.
Exactly. Exactly.
So, Margo, where do you see vampire fiction headed next?
I think vampires are going to be sort of part of larger types of fiction. For example, if you think of the book, which I just absolutely loved, A Discovery of Witches by Deborah Harkness. Now, there's a vampire in that book that's a very central character, but the book is not a vampire novel. In other words, I think we might see more novels in which vampires are part of the story, but they're not the whole story. I just think it'll move out in a larger way.
But Margo, you just answered the question. Vampires are having to move aside and no longer be the center of the story, just as that's what we have to do. We have to stop telling the story of the Earth and the story of the world as with us at the center.
Wow. Wow, that's great. That's a great insight.
Well, it's yours.
I hadn't thought of it.
This was such fun. Thank you so much.
It was great. I really loved it.
Margo Adler is a longtime NPR news correspondent. Her new book is called Vampires Are Us. And what's the best vampire novel you've ever read? We're looking for recommendations over on our Facebook page.